For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey everyone, this is 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. This episode, I'm joined by former NHL goaltender and current TV analyst of the Boston Bruins, Andrew Raycroft. If you like the show, please subscribe and rate in iTunes, Spotify, all the streaming channels. You can always find me at MikeMcKenna56 on all the socials. Happy to interact, happy to hang out and talk. Speaking of talking, let's talk about the Super Bowl. Whew. Tom Brady does it again. Heartbreaker for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, but you know what? Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they're all in full swing. And the only place you should be betting on these sports is at betonline.ag. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV. Place your bets at betonline.ag. They have hundreds of props and real-time odds on almost anything you can imagine. Of course, listen, at 24-hour online casino, that thing never closes. So head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Now that you got your bets squared away, let's kick it over to Andrew Raycroft, doing some great work in the Boston area, covering the Boston Bruins games, analyst. Love what he does. A lot of fun to talk to him. Careers crossed over a little bit. Well, basically, let's be honest, I backed up and I watched him play. But in any case, Andrew Raycroft.
All right, Razor. Thanks for joining me on 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Really appreciate your time. Where's your current location these days? What are you up to?
I'm in Boston, Mass. So I'm from Belleville, Ontario, married a Boston girl, Foxborough, actually, home of the Patriots. And if anyone from New England knows, Boston girls don't leave. So I was
you had no choice.
No choice. There was no way we were going back to Canada. No way we were going anywhere else. So
you had no desire to go back to Belleville?
I love Belleville. I love it. But no, I would probably not somewhere where we really wanted to set roots. So especially me, maybe even more so than Aaron. Maybe when we get real old and retire, we'll go back that way. But So in the Boston area, love it here. Three kids, great place to grow up. It's similar to Belleville, you know, on a bigger scale, but similar neighborhood, walk to school, all that stuff. So enjoying life with the kiddos.
I got about a month and a half in Belleville before I ended up in Ottawa. And first, I was surprised that it ended up being an American League team, considering that the OHL team left because they weren't supported. But man, like super, super nice people. And that's the one memory I have is just how we may not have been there long. And for a lot of the time I was away in Ottawa, but my family was there and just how nice everybody was taking care of my family while I was gone. Seemed like a great place to grow up.
It's quintessential small town. And even more so when I grew up. So it was, I can't imagine having a better place to grow up and better group of friends that I have to this day from there. You know, wonderful high school memories and wonderful memories of the Belleville Bulls going to those games every Saturday night. We had season tickets and being able to grow up watching junior hockey was a big influence. So it sucked when the Bulls left. Too bad they couldn't have figured out the rink issue prior to that.
Yeah, for sure.
The town really misses it, but it's good to have pro hockey there. I got to the Sens game. I don't know if it was the first season or the second. And yeah, it's not full yet. It hasn't really caught on. I think people are still a little upset that they don't have that community junior feel. It's a little different. Like, you know, guys in and out, yeah, moving around all the time. But I think now when we get out of this pandemic, people will be clamoring to get into that building just to switch things up. So it's a great city, great town. All my family's still there. So we're back there 3-4 times a year.
Were you the hot prospect coming out of Belleville?
Not at all.
I know that area is not exactly the first thing on the radar of Toronto, but you did get out of town by 16. So what was your progression like in youth hockey?
Certainly. And we've produced a lot of guys. A lot of guys from the Quinte Red Devils is the team there. They're cranking out draft picks to this day into the OHL. I was a seventh round pick OHL, so I was a smaller guy, didn't grow early. I played triple A hockey all the way up, but never a stud, always shared with the other goalie, never made an under 17 team. There was always two or three other goalies in our loop that were considered better than I was, at least. And caught a break, played tier two in Wellington, which is right across the bridge from my hometown, and played well enough, got drafted. But I was a seventh round pick to the OHL. So anyone listening, most people listening, you know that that means absolutely nothing. Right. I got a Sudbury Wolves hat in the mail. They didn't even pay for my bus ticket up there for training camp. So
I think I was a 14th rounder to Owen Sound as a flyer because they knew I was going to college, but they did it anyway. I didn't even get a hat.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So I think the 10 round is the limit on the hat. They got a
budget. They got budget caps.
Budget. So I went up to Sudbury on a whim, and the assistant coach there was the one who drafted me. I played against him in tier two, and I felt comfortable and went in. And Steve Valiquette, the big Valbowski, was the overage goalie there, made the team. And Valley ended up spraining his ankle playing basketball right before the season. And I was able to play the first 5 weeks of the season. And that got my name onto Central Scouting. And once you get on that list, you kind of get watched the rest of the season. But again, a fifth round NHLer, again, not a massive prospect by any means at that point.
Isn't it funny how injuries can lead to things? At first you called him the big Valvoski. Is that what you said? Like the wrestling reference?
Oh, there's all kinds of it. He was he was the best when he was 20 to a 17 year old kid. Like he was
good
the best
goalie then. Partner.
He's still the best now, but he was, you know, there's a lot of 20 year old goalies who aren't the best to 17 year old kids, especially back then. But he was awesome. Amazing. And it was great being there with him.
I got my first break really in the American League in playoffs, even though I'd been there most of the season. We picked up J.S. Oban, your old teammate in Toronto. Obes rolls his ankle in soccer before the game. And they're like, hey, you got to go. You're going in. And then he tried to like power through the warmup. I got like four shots in warmup. And next thing you know, I'm going in second round of playoffs in the American League thinking, oh God, I'm over my head here. You mentioned being a fifth round pick. I'm a sixth round pick. But I constantly hear this from people in media talking about how fourth, fifth, sixth round, they're late draft picks, they're beating the odds. Like, isn't that kind of ridiculous, especially for goalies, considering that there's always a big run of us kind of in that territory, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth round?
Certainly, there's the first, you know, the one guy that gets drafted in the first round every other year. And that's precisely, that's where guys are getting drafted now. They're not wasting draft capital early. And so yes, you go through the league, most of the guys that make it are guys that are drafted fourth, fifth. That just means that, you know, that they're probably fifth goalie picked. And that, if you break it down, that you're the one of the five goalies at your age in the world, maybe you're not that much of a flyer. Maybe you're not that much of a long shot at that point. Right.
Yeah. I mean, cause you might, you know, every team usually takes one to three goalies a draft. They may wait until the fourth round to take a goaltender. Like that's,
yeah, and even that, that's every other year, right? For the most part, if you have a guy that's decent in your organization, you're not going to get a goalie every year. So correct. It's not like a left winger that they're taking three a draft every year. So, you know, that loads up your roster or the depth chart. But whereas a goalie, I know for me, again, we're talking 20 years ago now, 22 years ago when I was drafted, but the Bruins didn't have anybody in their pipeline. It was John Graham was their third goalie at that time and literally no one else. So for me getting drafted by the Bruins in the fifth round, I was pretty far up the depth chart immediately, to your point.
So when you went to Sudbury, you spent a couple of years there. I mean, it's not terribly far, but then you end up in Kingston. That's close to Belleville. Like, were you buzzing home on the 401 with those awful snowy drives pretty often, or even like living at home and commuting? What was it like for you in junior?
I moved to Kingston. I did go back and forth a little bit, but that was my last year. So my buddies had all left for university. So everyone had dispersed that year. So it was for the best too. I would have been going back and forth probably too much had my friends all been there. So,
and that's a shitty drive sometimes. I was doing it between Ottawa and Belleville, like for the time I was with the Sens. And man, some of the scariest drives ever, like we land at midnight and I'm trying to drive to see my family at 2 a.m. and it's snowing. That's an awful stretch of highway.
Oh, if you get a little lakefront snow effect pushing through there, it can be, it can, that 45 minute drive turns into 4 hours and a half.
I've been there. Yeah.
So it's ugly.
The first time I think I ever heard your name. And again, I'm a St. Louis kid. So we're totally off the radar of Major Junior at the time. And this is, you know, the mid 90s, right? Nobody from St. Louis has ever made it, but I remember reading Goalie World magazine. And I saw your name because you'd been playing really well. And you may even been at like the top of their rankings. And despite being a fifth rounder, it seemed like you had some juice behind you coming out. And especially, like you said, there wasn't a lot in the Boston organization. So when you turned pro, were you thinking, all right, I got a real shot at this at the NHL level, or were you expecting more so to have to kind of bide your time and get that opportunity?
So when I got to Kingston, everything really fell into place. I had a bad second year in Sudbury. And then that third year of junior, stars aligned, CHL goalie, the MVP of the OHL, right. I nailed it. And so coming out, I had a lot more confidence than I did 12 months prior in my pro career. Certainly didn't expect to play right away in the NHL, but another ankle injury from John Graham teed me up to be on the opening day roster. And then a hamstring injury 2 nights later, I'm in my first start, third game in of the NHL season that year. So to your point of injuries, it was favorable for me very early in my career, certainly professionally, to get my look and get my chance and get my NHL game. You know, you get that NHL start there, you know, at that 20 years old, they're never taking that from you.
Was it daunting that you had Pat Burns and Mike Keenan behind the bench?
Oh man, Pat Burns was scary in a good way. Mike Keenan was just mean. He was just a bad, like he just destroyed. He was mean to people. He was mean to me. He wasn't ideal. Where Pat Burns was the opposite. He was the police officer, but he was sensitive enough to the fact that I was 20 years old and certainly he loved to yell at me. I don't think he knew my name. He called me kid all the time. Hey kid. Hey kid, you need to do this kid. You need to do this kid. But he'd stay on the ice after practice with me. He would do drills with me early on. And I have those memories of Pat Burns being a scary guy, an intimidating person, but someone that, you know, I think he had my best interest.
I didn't realize that Jerry Cheevers was still involved, at least on the paper, as a goalie coach. There was a big transition between the 90s and the early 2000s between the old guard guys who played to goalie coaches nowadays. Like we know of people that didn't play at all, but they studied the position. It's very analytical, technical. What did you take from Jerry Cheevers? What was he like as a goalie coach for you?
Cheesy's a legend here in Boston, just an old school, a blast. So I actually had Brian DeCord my first year pro. He was energetic.
He's the current, he's the head of the goalie department for Phoenix now, for Arizona, correct. I apologize.
Yeah, so he's all in. And especially back then, he was really young, really eager. He was coming to Providence and helping me and staying long after Providence practices, which, you know, you don't see a guy back in the day when there was just
2001 in the American League?
Yeah.
I didn't have a full-time goalie coach until I was like 30 in 2013.
Yeah, and he was Boston's guy, but he was coming down still. He was doing both. He was all over the place.
That's the benefit of having your affiliate really close too. Eh?
Correct. Yeah, it's a 40-minute drive. So, and then he left. Whether it was 1 year or 2 years, and then Cheesy came back again. So Cheesy was around. He'd come and visit me in Sudbury or in Kingston when I was doing well. They start bringing more guys in to watch you and. Sure. You know, Cheesy came in and I got to meet him and then in 2003 he was there and that's kind of when I stepped in and you know it was more a matter of him coming in and telling an old story and hanging out and while you're icing a knee and then skating around on the ice and then get off the ice, you know.
Maybe a
few you should stand up more there, you should stand up more there comments and that was it. So
it's funny with those guys though, I think that even though they may not grasp today's technical game, I do think from the mental side of it, they understood and they could be helpful in that way.
So helpful as a younger guy, especially not. And for Cheesy, it was more a matter of who cares, you know, no big deal. Just win the game. Just win. Don't worry anything else. And there was a lot of, and that's how Cheesy was. He, all the old guy, Wayne Cashman was the other assistant. They'd be telling stories about Cheesy winning 6-5. It didn't matter.
Grant Fuhr is the same way when I talk to him.
Absolutely.
Most important thing.
He's the best to talk to. Telling about 7-6 wins or losses and the you know, awesome. But Cheesy, similar to that. And that's, you know, as a young guy, that meant a lot to me. So to your point, the mental side, those guys add a lot of value. They have a lot of hockey sense. They understand the game. They understand it. They might not recognize it the same way, but they get it.
So when you were a young guy, when you were in college, or college, listen to me, I can't get out of that mode, right? So when you were in junior and those first couple of years you mentioned Accord, was he really who got your fundamentals where you wanted him to be, your technical side, or did you have other help along the way from goalie coaches?
So my first big jump in that was John Elkin. He's now in Toronto, AHL goalie coach. I met him when I was 16. He's in the Toronto area, right when I got drafted OHL. And I went there. That was the first real non-summer camp goalie quasi school that I'd gone to. And that's where I really learned slides and pushes and more of that Francois Allaire style, right. Maybe a little bit of a hybrid where John was, but that's where that 1996, that's what was coming down the pipe was. And that really propelled me, you know, it put me ahead. When I got to the NHL, I had been doing that stuff where it was just catching on. Byron Defoe wasn't sliding. He wasn't doing butterfly pushes at that point. And I was able to do all that. I was moving around, you know, after 3 years with John at a high level.
Do you think that's really what set you up for that rookie of the year? I mean, you win rookie of the year, but I also look at the fact that you played significant NHL games before you really cracked the league full time. So do you think it was kind of a hybrid of having that really good understanding of the position on top of just having some experience before you got thrown into the deep end?
Yeah, the rookie of the year was that. Yeah, I'd already played 3 years of pro. I had played in the NHL those three seasons prior, you know, at least two games every year. You know, I think I went 15-2 and then 8. So I was really just right under that rookie limit. And I stayed in Boston that summer. That's really what set it up, was that Mike Sullivan was the coach in Providence. He moved up. So we moved up together. I changed my gear to Coho as goalie. I don't bring this up, but that made a big difference.
What were you in previously to that?
I was in the CCM stuff. So it was a little smaller on me. I wasn't a big guy to begin with. The Coho worked perfect as blocking. You know,
was that CCM time, like the old like gatekeeper stuff, like Marty had the
Brodeur style? I didn't
style.
Use the gatekeeper. It was the other one. That was like the Heaton. I wore Heaton in junior. So they went from Heaton to CCM.
Gotcha.
So I had a gear change and I stayed in Boston that whole year, worked out with the strength guy, got strong, got bigger, and just proved the commitment level. So that year they brought Felix in, but there was no, it was Felix and I, and I was as close to being on the team as an AHL guy can be going into that season. And that built confidence for me. And I was comfortable at that point being around everybody.
You didn't have Timmy Thomas there. You didn't have John Graham. You didn't have Kay Whitmore. Like, there was a lot of goalies that filtered through.
Yeah, Timmy was there my third year. And then he left and went to Europe at that time. So that was my last year in Providence. It was Timmy and I.
Was he as legendary like before games as I've heard? I heard he had a cheeseburger every night before a game. Is there any truth to that?
I would believe it. I didn't see him actually physically eat the cheeseburger, but certainly in the minors, he was, a specimen, I guess I would say.
It's funny now that Kay Whitmore is the czar of all goalie gear, right?
I know.
You got to be his teammate.
Winter was my first. Yeah, he was the first guy in Providence with me, him and I. And yeah, I learned a lot from Winter. He loved wine, loved going to dinner and cooking. As a 20-year-old guy, you don't know what any of that stuff is. So going on the road with him was always a blast. And now, yeah, it was always funny once they made him the equipment guy for him to show up and measure my gear after games. We always had a big, big laugh about that.
You think he ever got any leniency because of it?
No,
we can't accuse him of those things, right?
No, exactly. He's still in a big position. I don't want to start that rumor, but no, I'm sure he was by the book. He had those wood calipers. He was going up and down the same as everyone else.
Well, your Coho gear, you mentioned that being a turning point, bigger stuff, right? I think that was the 580 line.
Yeah.
black and gold, like a pretty iconic setup, man. Like, were you big into your equipment? Did it matter to you, one, how you looked and how it fit and performed? Were you dialed with it?
I didn't change a lot. I loved, but I fell in love with the Coho stuff right away. And I always regret not doing it earlier. All the Quebec guys had it. I had my CCM thing going. I liked being a little different with that because everyone's going to Coho, but I should have gone earlier.
And it was all made by Lefebvre, who was French Canadian. So all the Quebec
guys. Yeah, those guys all had it. Like, that was like everybody in the Quebec Major Junior League had it. And I was wearing Heaton still. Like, you know, I don't need to do that. But I should have. I think I would have played in the NHL the year before had I have, you know.
Wow, you think it made that big of a difference, huh?
I think it did. Yeah, it was bigger. It was sturdier, and it gave me more confidence. There's no question. Yeah. So at least the pads, you know, I look back at the pictures in the AHL with my CCM pads and compare it to the, you know, 2 months later in Coho's, it made a big difference. But that's easy for me to say 20 years later too, right? It's a fish story at this point. I love the colors. I was always a color guy. I liked having the colors. I loved, you know, most of my sets until really at the end, I stayed away from white, or all white anyways. I just liked having the color it's comical now with Instagram, and people are, you know, being so old school now, people are going back to those kits and I get lumped in, which is kind of cool. It was never really the idea at the time, but, I get a kick out of it now.
Well, we all wore dark equipment and colorful equipment back then.
Like, that was the whole point, right?
That was exactly. We're goalies. We're going to show off our personalities. Like, do you buy into the white theory that everybody's on now? Like, you had your best season in black equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no. I don't mind the idea of having the white border. I don't mind Ian Clark. I had Ian. I love Ian.
Yeah. I had him in Columbus as well.
Yeah. I love him. Really thoughtful. And, you know, I like Markstrom going white all the way around and then having a bunch of color in the middle. Mm-hmm. Do I think it makes a difference at the end of the day? Probably not.
You still have to make the save, right?
It's the same inch. It's all about, like, you know, it's a matter of where you read the shot and how you read the play at the end of the day. But I don't mind the white border, but to go all white, it kind of pains me at times.
Yeah. So you come off,
when you have so many options now, like, they can do whatever they want.
I mean, you can literally print. I mean, so I'm in Vegas last year. You know, they'd occasionally wheel me out for practice last season, right? I'm right out of the league. I'm a current guy for the most part, but I'm the broadcaster now. And
perfect.
The day Fleury needed some time off, it's like, hey, we got to call Mike in. So I practice every couple of weeks. And I remember I called up Bauer and I'm like, hey, like, I look like an idiot out here. Can you help me out? Because my gear didn't match, right? I had like a Sens mask and some just white stuff. And you're like, okay. And I'm like, design anything you want, because this is Vegas and these are never going to be used in a game. I'm like, you could even throw the guys from The Hangover on there, you know? And it was almost like the guys at Bauer couldn't even like wrap their head around the fact that I wanted something completely outrageous just so they could do it. You know, like, it's the possibilities are endless now. It's almost kind of frustrating, isn't it, that the guys don't take advantage of it at times?
No, you're right. The white is such a Debbie Downer in comparison to even, you know, what Leonard's rocking, you know, that's cool stuff.
So that season ends. You're just like on top of the world and the lockout, and it's 2004-05. Did you have any opportunity to play anywhere besides Europe? Could you have gone to the American League if you wanted to? What led to you going to Finland for that season?
Yeah, they offered, you know, for me to go back to the AHL. I had done that 3 years. I rode all those buses. I wasn't really going to gain anything from going back. It was a lose-lose, you know, for me. If I go back and don't play well for whatever reason, like if it doesn't go well, it just wasn't a good fit for me. I didn't want to go back and ride the buses. I kind of made a point that I was going to stay in the NHL. And that was my mindset as 24-year-old guy. So went to, you know, hung out, hoped, you know, we're going to play, and then Christmas time, it's all right, you know, let's figure something out. So I actually signed in Sweden first, and they ended up having a rule that you needed to be on a contract. And I did not have a contract. because I was a restricted free agent. So at the last second, my bags are packed. I'm flying to Stockholm the next day. They called and like, you can't come and play. And that was like 2 weeks before Christmas, going to go play in Djurgården, start like the best setup ever, and so it ended up being really disappointing. And then Finland came along. It was Finland or Austria. And I ended up going to Finland and loved it there. Lived in Tampere. What a great experience. First time I'd been to Europe. First time I played over there. Just fell in love with the whole setup. And it was so, unfortunately, I lost the season in the NHL. Unfortunately, it cost a lot of money. Unfortunately, I didn't get to keep the momentum going in my career. I would have done anything or would do anything to have played that year, stayed in Boston all summer, worked out every single day at the rink, you know, had an apartment set up, had everything teed up, had my girlfriend, who's now my wife, like everything it would have been the best summer of my entire life, which kind of got tossed in the air, but I made the best of it in Finland and had a cool experience.
I've talked to a lot of people that went through that period, but not a lot of younger guys at that time. And I'm curious, for someone like you that, you know, you get to the league, you got a little momentum going. Were you involved at all in the CBA negotiations, in the lockout itself? Did you get involved in the union side at all? And was there any resentment to the players who did and not being able to get to an agreement earlier?
There was no resentment. I wasn't on the interior. I wasn't in the big meetings, but I went to every meeting in Toronto. I was on planes back and, you know, I was keeping my finger on it. It meant a lot. And
yeah, you were engaged.
Bob Goodnow, his son played against me growing up. So I had known Bob a little bit and I talked to Bob quite a bit. You know, this is what I have, Bob. You know, I'd call him and try and get 10 minutes out of him during, you know, where are we? Should I go to Europe? You know, is this going to happen? And you know, it always ended up being, you know, I don't think we're playing Razor. You know, it was always that, and we're going to do our, you know, the best and blah, 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 blah. So I tried to stay involved, but I certainly wasn't one that was moving a needle at that point. And now we know the stories even more so, the back rooms that was going on at that time, right, which is a little more, I guess it's a little resentful that all happened, but it seemed as though it was gonna go that way no matter what. Even if we had perfect unity as a union, there was not gonna be a season that year. So I guess I always looked at it, good thing I had the season I had the year before, rather than, you know, lining up my perfect year when there was no NHL.
Coming out of the lockout, your team went from being great in Boston to being terrible in Boston. And this is the existential question for goaltenders. I know that your season isn't what you wanted. I'm sure people in Boston would probably agree with that. We've all been there as goalies before. But realistically, with the lineup you guys iced and what was going on, how much better do you think you could have performed that year above what your statistics say if it had been a better club on the ice?
You know, I was never going to touch the numbers I had prior to the lockout. That's out of the question. I could have been better. I should have been better. You know, I proved it. I had done it before. We got into a funk and Joe gets traded and I don't even know who our defense were. And that's not a slight on any of those guys. You know, I don't want to do that, but I don't remember anybody playing well on that team. You know, it was Patrice might've, you know, hung in, did enough to stick around, but even that, we just didn't have a very good team and we got smoked on a nightly basis. We were not prepared. And as a goaltender, when that's going downhill and again, I was already dealing with the lingering stuff. You know, I was holding out a little. They weren't really doing a great job with my contract. They weren't really rewarding me. I felt like I was getting slighted there. I felt, you know, the momentum of my offseason, everything was kind of going backwards on me all of a sudden. And I hadn't really dealt with that for a few years. So I didn't deal with it as well as I should have. I should have been better. I should have been better prepared. But at the same time, we weren't getting into the playoffs no matter how well I played.
Did you feel like the change in the style of play in the NHL affected you?
There was a lot of power plays. And I think, yes, in the fact that it didn't necessarily, it changed my mindset didn't change. So I didn't go with the flow and say, all right, two goals used to be good. Now it's three goals is good. Three goals is good and deal with that. Instead, I would get frustrated giving those up. And I couldn't change the mindset of, the power plays. And mm-hmm. I couldn't change my mindset on fighting through more screens or fighting east to west a little bit more. I wanted the game to stay the same way as it was. I was comfortable there and I didn't fight through the differences and the new changes more between my head than anything else.
Oh, and equipment too. Like, did you think that going from 12 to 11 and the smaller blocker and smaller gloves, did that have an effect on you in any way?
Well, what happened too, even more different than that didn't, I don't think that the size changed too much, but I changed, Reebok went full on change. It basically, the best way to describe it now is going from a CCM Extreme to Bauer, Ultra. That was the difference. They went straight flat, really stiff from those cushy cohos. So I probably should have fought a little bit more to keep the cohos, or even I should have changed earlier. I should have put the cohos or the Reeboks on right away.
Forced yourself to wear these things instead of kind of hold on to the past.
Doing it the last second. Like when I was in Finland, I kept the cohos. I had a pair of Reeboks, but I was like, I don't feel as comfortable. No big deal. You know, I'll get to these in the summer when I should have just jumped in. And again, that's a mindset. You know, I wanted to stay comfortable. I wanted to stay and I should have just changed and dealt with it and figured out how they work for me.
It was like that when Bauer made the first Supreme, like that, the Odin or 1S, I guess. Remember when it came out 5 years ago with the elastic strapping, lightweight, all that. And I remember getting one of the first demo sets. Like Bauer was really good to me my whole career. And they sent me this demo set and I put it on. And I'm like, man, this is different. I know this is different. But I could also tell why I was going to be better if I wore it. And I switched mid-season after like a week in practice. But I knew I just had to mentally tell myself, this is going to work. You have to stick with it.
Yeah,
and it did. Like eventually I adapted to it and it improved my game. I got better when I wore something that was more modern at 32 years old.
And that's the reason for it being more modern. The technology does work. It's accepting it. And I probably should have had your mindset more than I had at the time.
So the big trade, how did this feel going home? I mean, I'm guessing you were a Toronto Maple Leafs fan as a kid. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Patrick Waugh, Canadians.
Okay. All right. So did that add a layer to this trade going to the Leafs? And also you did have experience at least in a really tough market in Boston. Do you think that going into it, you're thinking, okay, I've been through Boston. I can handle anything. I can handle Toronto media. I'm ready for this.
I did think that. And I got slapped in the face probably after the first exhibition game when I was up there, that recognizing that this is a different animal. And you go in, oh, it's Toronto, it's Canada. Everyone's really educated. They're going to see all the nuance of the game. And, you know, and then you're like, maybe not. Maybe it's wins, losses, doesn't matter. And don't give up any goals. So that definitely is different. The media in Boston and Toronto is always going to be different. It's never going to be the same, as tough as Boston can be at times. The trade, it was perfect. I mean, I was so excited to be going from one original six to the next, to knowing what it means to be a Toronto Maple Leaf in Canada and certainly in Ontario. All my buddies lived in Toronto. My family's an hour and a half away. It was perfect. It was exciting. I was pumped. And then you get a 3-year deal out of it there too. So everything was, it was such a good switch and a great mindset change for me from getting out of Boston.
As excited as you were, was there added pressure out of it?
I didn't feel it right away. I didn't feel it. I was excited. I was excited by a great new opportunity. I thought I knew what I was getting into with, you know, how you're the starting goalie of the Leafs. Everybody in Canada now knows who you are. And no one, you know, you can be an NHLer and everyone knows what it's like to, you know, you're an NHLer in Canada, but if you're on a Canadian team and a starting goalie on a Canadian team and a starting goalie on the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's a different animal. Going to lunch and going to dinner is a lot different than what it is when you're a Boston Bruin and you're going to lunch and dinner in Toronto.
So that, I don't know whether it was your first year or your second, but the mask you had in Toronto that had all the legends on it, was that your idea? I can't remember the artist for it. So if you could help me with that, that was an absolutely gorgeous mask. How did you come up with the concept for us?
It was, and I actually did come up with that myself. Cipra did it. Frank did it. Frank was amazing. He did the thing, my iTechs in Boston as well. I told Frank I wanted the guys that are honored. And I mean, he hit the thing out of the park. So I could never have expected the detail he put on that. It's awesome. And so yeah, I gave him I want the garden on the top. I want Felix on there. I want Paul Metier. I want Johnny Bauer, George Armstrong, all of these guys, I want them on there and go for it. And yeah, he nailed it. And it's, I love now where other people put those on their masks. You know, all the guys are doing that around the league all the time now.
That was one of the first tribute masks.
I was
right.
The first one to do it. I really was. And yeah. So that's pretty cool.
I did the same thing when I got to Jersey. Lindsay Middlebrook was a guy who was my goalie coach. I went to his camps in St. Louis, and he probably played 36 games in the NHL, about the same as me, ironically enough. Okay. And fellow full right goalie. But Lindsay played for the Devils, and that's what I remembered as a kid. And I'm like, I want to put him on one side. I'm gonna put Chico Resch on the other. And it's gonna be great. Yeah. And that was 2010. I mean, it wasn't as popular now, and you really set the tone for that, man. That season, you win 37 games and set a franchise record. I know there's shootouts involved, but I don't care. You played almost every game for Paul Maurice, 72 total. What does it take for a goalie to be considered successful in Toronto? Is the standard simply a Vezina and a Stanley Cup, or a Vezina and a Conn Smythe? Is there anything below that that can be acceptable for a goalie there?
I don't think so. You got to get in the playoffs. I didn't get in the playoffs. That'll always be the biggest regret. I think that might change.
But then you make the playoffs. If you lose in the first round, who are they going to blame?
Well, no, and that's, and I was just, yeah, you're right. You finished my thought, because you look at what Freddie has to deal with now. I mean, the guy's lights out. He's as talented, as skilled, as facing as many shots as anyone in the league.
Easy top third goaltender in the league in the world.
Absolutely. And he gets in the playoffs. He plays well in the playoffs. They don't get over game seven humps against a great Boston Bruins team, and he stinks, right? What are we going to do with this guy?
Yeah, got to get rid of him. We need somebody else.
Someone else. So I guess Johnny Bauer's, the standard, whatever he did, you're looking at 50 years ago, Johnny Bauer would have won. So it's a tough spot that way. It's certainly expectation probably isn't realistic on a normal basis. They've never had a Vezina Trophy winner, I don't think. So, for them to expect it every year, I get it in Montreal. That's a factory, but not in Toronto.
Second year, things go they go the other direction even more. I mean, were you just mentally swimming at that point, trying to get your footing?
Done. I was gone, and I was gone the day again. That playoff, missing that playoff. That summer was awful. I put so much into that, and
it's your heart and soul. You've played every game, man.
No, it was literally everything I had. I dragged my ass pat over the finish line the last few games. I was mentally, emotionally just done, and then not to make it, and then to take the shit. And, I couldn't recover. I should have went. I needed the sports psychologist right then and there. That's the those days. You see guys do it now, and they bounce back and they find their keywords and they find their key thoughts. I didn't have any of those. Vesta comes in. I wasn't able to compete at the level I should have mentally. And it just downward spiral. I think we went to overtime the first game, maybe won the third game, and then I couldn't play anymore. It was like I had no idea what I was doing, and that spiraled really fast in a market like that, and in a place where I really did give a lot. It was hard for me.
So how'd you flip the script? You get to Colorado and you go 9-1.
Yeah, it was similar from new scenery. Felt like the pressure was off. Felt motivated. Felt I really wanted to prove. And we had a good team in Colorado too. I mean, Joe Sakic was still healthy. Milan Hayduk, Adam Foote, Darcy Tucker came, so I had some comfort there. I remember going and being like, "Wow, this team's really, really talented compared to what we had prior." So And again, I didn't play two games in a row, I don't think, through those 10-1 victories either. I was backing up, and I would go in and I lost the first game, and then I ripped off 9 in a row, and just really got on a roll, and just we petered out. We had injuries, and that same just couldn't finish, and you know, would have loved to have done that.
Did you miss having Brian McCabe as a teammate? I know he threw some pretty legendary things when you're in Toronto. A New York Jets game I heard about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Caber's the best. I still talk to him often. He was such a good teammate, and everyone says it everywhere he was. He's just a great person, great, great family guy, always super nice to my wife and now my kids. Just a great guy, even though he scored on me on a 4-on-3 in overtime that he could never live down in Toronto. You know, it's like unbelievable what he got shipped for.
He was the director of player development maybe when I was with Florida. And yeah. I'll never forget it. Like we had this thing set up where we had a burger battle and I was supposed to be the chef. Right. So I come up with this concept and we go and we compete against other chefs in Springfield, Massachusetts, and Caber shows up he's like, the whole team's coming. I'm like,
oh great. Yeah.
And so he opened a tab, and it was like a Tuesday night, right? So we didn't play till Friday. He opens a tab for the whole team. And it was one of the best memories I had. And he's like, you know, he's happier than shit because he's like hosting this thing, right? And he's having a great time, takes the Uber home. But I think that those type of players are just so, and people in management too, are just so critical for success of a team.
Lots more to come with the 2004 NHL Rookie of the Year, Andrew Raycroft. But first, I want to tell you, I'm doing some online coaching with 44visionhockey.com, having a blast doing it. Games get uploaded through Live Barn or Hockey TV. It's really, really good for amateur hockey, for junior hockey, college hockey. You can put those clips in and we break them down. I go through everything and I take some of those clips, put them on your player page. You can always reference back to those. It's kind of like Cliff's Notes, you know, it's like the bullet points of what you need. But the meat of what we do is in the Zoom meeting, one-on-one, face-to-face. I take what I learned playing from all the goalie coaches that I had and we transfer it to your game. So it's a fun way to do it. It's interactive. We get to see progress. And again, if you go to 44visionhockey.com, sign up, put me in as your coach. I'd love to work with you. More now from Andrew Raycroft.
When you're playing your best, what were your feelings in the net?
No feelings.
Yeah. Having fun, right?
Just blank, read, react. And you know, I always just, yeah, no feelings, like giving up a bad goal, no big deal. Making a great save, no big deal. You know, we'll just keep rolling. And I think the other thing is really, really focusing on the outcome, on the win. You know, again, we touched on Grant Fuhr, 7-6, 2-1. That's all that matters. Just find a way. All right, we're down 2-0. I can't give up another goal. You can't give up another goal. And having those kinds of thoughts rather than, all right, if I give up another one, are we going to be okay? Or, you know, where are, you know, let's, this power play, we can get away with this one, or, you know, like just kind of not being completely dialed in on the win, worrying about, all right, I've got 15 shots on the board. If I give up one, I still have a good save percentage. Those kinds of thoughts that can easily creep in when everything's going really well. You're the game's over in a split second.
Yeah.
So you're not feeling anything. You're not thinking about anything. You're just firing through. And I that's what I miss the most. I miss the playing the game and having it over before you know it, or playing a period. I don't know if you had these feelings, but when 20 minutes flew by and he made 12 shots on or 12 saves on 12 shots and you're already in the dressing room and you're on to the next one, your team's up 1-0. Like that is the best feeling in the world.
Especially your first period
at the time, but you just like, now I miss that. That's what I miss, is going through that game 1-on-30, and it feels like you it was a 2-minute game.
Does it not feel similar to now, for both of us being analysts on TV, you with in for Nesset and me with Vegas and AT&T Sportsnet, like, is it not like just nailing a pre-show? You get all your information, you don't stutter, you look at the cameras properly, and you get done with it, and you're just like, yes, that went by so fast.
Yeah, when it goes by fast. And it's not the same, but it's all we got.
That's it. It is. So like, were you in that moment of Zen playing for Vancouver? And again, you had another good season. You got to play with Luongo. Like, I'm guessing, especially with him playing so many games, was there not a lot of pressure when you were there, or did you feel it?
That was the most fun I'd have. I mean, again, rookie of the year, that's amazing. But I think being a little older at that time and going through some hard stuff and maybe not being on teams that were, you know, really close, that was the place that I loved the most. That year I loved the most. I loved Ian Clark as a goaltending coach. He helped me so much, made me so much better that year.
Same boat, man.
From the start of the year to the end of the year, it was, you know, we got in at the start and I struggled at the end in Colorado. And he's like, this is goalie school this year. You're going to play some games, but we're going to work on stuff. We're going to get better. And this is going to be goalie school. And it all clicked right at the start of right around Christmas. It all fell into place. I was probably, I don't know, 4-4 around at that point, you know, like good numbers. We had a great team, the Twins, like Burrows, Kessler, everybody. You go down the list. We had an awesome team. So that made it fun. Watching Lou every day was fun. The city's amazing. You're in Canada. But the biggest part of that year was just getting better and having it click. All the hard work, all the extra time putting in with Clarkie paying off and really feeling dialed in was and so, yes, I did feel that way again. I hadn't felt it for a long time, and that was the best part of being in Vancouver, was feeling dialed in and winning games that maybe I wouldn't have won prior to.
I can hear Clarkie's voice right now. Razor, we're going to goalie school.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, just clear as day in my head. Did you have kids at this point?
I just had my son.
Do you think that helped?
Yeah, it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt. So he was born in July 30th. So I came out, I was in Vancouver after the first month. I was on my own in that first training camp. So I think just having, it didn't necessarily help just having him. I think as a whole, that group all had kids. That group all were the same as me. We all had young kids. Lou had a daughter that was 3 or 4 years old. So we were having like birthday parties. My wife was comfortable. It was more that. So I don't know if it would be the same if you're on a team full of single guys and that, you know, my son keeps me out of the loop. This actually having a son, you know, having my guy and my wife there, it kept us in the loop and made us big family type. Like you just talked to like Caber. That's the kind of group we had in Vancouver as well, having a bunch of Cabers.
That's the best feeling when the whole team gets along, you know, because it's not just the guys on the ice. If there's problems in the wives' room, if there's a big mixture of people, like they all have to get along. And I always made a point of that in the teams I played on. I'm like, we need to get everybody together and we've got to make this work no matter what and have fun as a group. I mean, did you ever run into that situation where it didn't work in the locker room or in the wives' room? And it negatively affected things?
Not to some of the stories we've all heard where I was never around for one of the big blowups. I went to a couple teams where the blowups had already happened and there was certainly some shrapnel still out there that you had to, you know, this is, you know, careful here, careful there, careful with this one. Telling my wife, like, this is the lay of the land. Like, this is how it works.
But basically, you can't trust this girl.
Yeah, yeah.
We've all heard that in the locker room.
Yeah. We're not talking too much about this, or you know, maybe stay on this side of the room when this person's in there. So there was some of that on a couple of places, but overall, I was lucky. You know, again, like I said, we didn't have any of the major blowups where you literally have guys, you know, dividing the team. None of that, fortunately.
So, what led you to Dallas?
Dallas. So I came off that good year in Vancouver. I wanted to stay in Vancouver more than anything. I wanted Corey Schneider to get traded more than anything.
Say you had some guy coming along, right?
Yeah. Schneider was there. He was in the minors that whole year I was there. And there was lots of talk, you know, he was going to get traded. Obviously Lou had a 12-year contract, 28-year contract, whatever it was.
Permanent agreement.
Yeah. Schneider was on his way out at some point. I was hoping it was that summer and it wasn't. Vancouver offered me a deal to be there. They were going to give me a full boat to go down to the minors and just be there. And I had a good year. I had the opportunity to go to Dallas. And again, another great city, great place to live. My son was now a year. So we'd be outside a lot, just a good place that worked. And it was a 2-year deal. So I had a little bit of security there on top of a good team, a group of guys that I knew, and Kari Lehtinen was a great goalie, and to be able to help him out was enticing.
Kari's easy to play with, isn't he?
Oh man, he's the best. He's the best.
We had a solid month and a half together, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so laid back. Just a really nice guy. And I don't know about you, he was the most talented guy I played with.
Naturally, for sure.
Lou is the best, but Kari, to watch him make saves on a daily basis in practice was artistic. What he could do and how he could move himself was something I envied and something I really enjoyed watching. And to this day, you know, the most talented guy I played with as a partner, no question.
How was it having Crawford as a coach? I mean, you're both from Belleville. Did he take it easy on you because of that? Was there prior history there?
No, yeah, we were good. So I played against his brother, coached against me all the way through junior. Lou is the Belleville Bulls coach all the way up. So I knew the family. My parents grew up at the same time. So they went to the same high school. Lots of overlap there. Mark had never been in Belleville for as long as I had lived around there, but certainly knew him. And yeah, we had a Belleville connection. Mark, you know, Crow could lose his mind, certainly. Expected a lot. He had Patrick Waugh, so he expected a lot out of his goalies. But no, he never, I had a pretty good season that year. He never flipped out on me.
Did you have any coaches that you could really look at and go, this guy's just a goalie hater? Like, some coaches are pretty sympathetic to goalies.
Mike Keenan, that's an easy one. Mike Keenan pulled me in Madison's, my first game, Madison Square Garden. He pulled me 13 minutes into the game. I had one goal against on 8 shots.
He
yanked me on the goal. I gave up one goal in Madison Square Garden, first game there against the Rangers. He pulled me on like a Sunday afternoon. So he hated goalies.
Did he say anything about it to you?
Oh, no. I think my agent called, is everything okay? Like, you know, not even like I was 20, so I couldn't say anything anyways. And it was like, nah, he just felt like he didn't have it.
Wow.
Like, all right.
Seat of the pants coaching. Oh, so, I mean, you had the unfortunate, I don't even know how to describe this, the right words for it, but you went through 2 lockouts. And you would have gone through a second one in 12-13. You went to Italy. Was that lockout really the reason why you went overseas again? I mean, I know you went to the American League the year before, but were you looking to reinvent yourself in Europe? Were you looking to play it out? Were you hoping that the NHL was coming back? You get another crack? Where were you at that point?
I was mostly done, mostly burnt out, wanted to go to Europe. But my wife was pregnant with twins again, so I knew I didn't have too much longer moving around. I'd had a good run. It was fun. I had an opportunity to sign with a team and be the third guy, but the lockout played a part in that. I didn't want to go and get stuck being just in the minors and having no motivation. And basically the way I looked at it was burning a year of an opportunity to go to Europe, to be honest. So I was 34. So it wasn't like I could really go to the minors and, you know, I wasn't going to be Dwayne Rolison and play till 43. Right. And that's what he did and turn it around. I didn't feel like I had that in me, and had the NHL season been going on and had I been able to catch an injury break right away and get myself back, I'm sure I would have stayed, but knowing the lockout was going to be at least Christmas, which it ended up being, that would have been 4 months of just being in the minors and not really having a good, clear on. So I went to Italy, had a chance to live downtown Milan. It was a perfect way to kind of decompress and see the world and still play hockey a little bit.
That's all I'd heard about Italy is how much fun it is. Like, it's not exactly a place you go if you're trying to keep your career going. It's kind of got the reputation of where careers die, but you have a hell of a time while your career is dying.
That's right. And it's funny though, because a few of the goalies have actually been able to go over and parlay it into one more year. So for me, I went to Sweden. The same time Justin Poggi was there, he went from Italy to Sweden, and then he went up to the top league. You know, like, he stayed in the top league in Sweden for 3 or 4 years because he was in Italy first. And Chris Mace went over the year after I was there because he called, like, hey, what's the deal? I'm like, it's a blast. I mean, you're playing hockey that doesn't resemble hockey, but it's a blast. And he turned that into another year in Germany. So for the goalies, they're able to kind of move from there, but no, at the time it was just a blast. It's, you know, you're on buses to going up into the Alps and so, you know, the first line's decent hockey. And then after that, it drops off considerably, but I had a blast, you know, living in Milano. We had fans that were crazy. It was a cool European experience.
After the year in Sweden, were you ready? Were you content in making your decision and walking away on your terms?
Yeah, I was done at Christmas. So I was grinding up until then, really working hard. I was really excited being up there. And then we realized right around Christmas, it was, you know, my family came over, my wife's family came over, and it's like my son was 4 then, I believe. It's like, what, you know, I can't keep doing this to everybody else. So right after Christmas, I knew that was it, that this was going to be my last couple of months, and which was, you know, a little sad, but at the same time, I was completely at peace with it. Like I said, it was pretty sad looking at the two of, you know, my wife and I looking at each other at Christmas and knowing what we were missing back home and for what we were giving up, we weren't, you know, she definitely wasn't getting in return, and it turned out I wasn't either.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And I got to know when my last game was, which was the coolest thing. You know, I got to plan for it. My parents flew in, my daughters were there, and it turned out being my last game is one of my favorite memories, not a sad memory in any way. You know, it helps that we won in a shootout and I stopped everything in the shootout.
But so it's funny.
Did you kind of get to have a similar experience for your last game?
I did. It was a little different in that we ended up, saw that the team that I was on had moved up from relegation the year before. So there's still relegation there. So we ended up in the relegation tournament again. We didn't have enough pieces. We get to the end. So my last game, we had to win to keep the team in the
division. Great. It's your last game and you've got pressure on you.
And we had at the last three games, actually, we won all three. We started out relegation really poor, a couple tough, like 1-0 losses. We ended up winning 2 on the road. And then we have this last game, whoever wins goes through. I think we could have tied. Your full barn, like that was like, so to your point, like another great light way to finish. It was, you know, kind of silly that it's a relegation game in Sweden was my last game, but I remember it. The fans were all on the ice after the game and everyone's happy. Everyone knows I'm done playing. So all the guys on the team are getting a kick out of it and they all get to keep their jobs. You know, they get to stay. So I wasn't winning a Stanley Cup, but all the guys that I still talk to there, make sure to remind me that it don't just slough it off. It meant a lot to a lot of people to play well and win that game.
I had the same thoughts. You know, it's like short of winning a Stanley Cup or a championship at any level, walking off the ice a winner, surrounded by your friends, family, you know, a couple guys bought me a couple bottles of wine.
Yeah, there you go. You know, like that's as good as it gets. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it could be 100 times worse.
How'd you fill your time until you got the gig as an analyst?
So we had twins that were 1 year old. So I turned into a bit of a nanny.
This is 2014 and we're 2020 now, 2021
correct.
Now.
Lack of better word. Yeah. So I started out with that and bounced around. I've taken a few real jobs. I've got my real estate license, trying to find my way in the real world. And being in Boston, I went to China. They've been bringing people over up until this past summer. I was on the first trip just to build the game over there. The Bruins have a sponsor, or, you know, we go over, do the sponsor stuff, do some camps. And that got me back into it. And then from there, I started doing Learn to Play with the Bruins. And then I started doing alumni games with the Bruins. And then Nesson's right there. Why don't you come in and we need a third guy. Why don't you come and rehearse? And I just started liking it. I didn't expect to get back in. Certainly with Boston, I hadn't been in Boston for, 10 years at that point.
Did you almost feel forgotten in Boston in a way?
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. Especially they won the cup in 2011. Completely forgotten. I've been coming back every summer. I was down on the Cape. I was around, but no one cares. If you're not a Bruin in Boston, it doesn't matter. You don't play. You know, like, they don't even know there's any other teams in the NHL.
Even if you're a Bruin in Boston, they want to run you out of town anyway. If you're
yeah, that's true too, especially in 06. So no, completely just started putting it together. And then the TV thing, I wasn't sure on either. And I've learned to love it. It's not the easiest thing. Like, you know, it's not easy. It does require some skill. It requires some practice. And I've recognized that I am a creature of that nighttime game and getting out of the house and getting home late. And that's what I know. And I think I try to fight that maybe a little and trying to get into the 9-to-5 grind, but you recognize it's not for me.
Do you still take a nap before games?
No, I don't. I don't. I get good sleep at night. I'm old and I'm over 40 now. So I get up early and all that stuff. I wish I could take more nap. No, I mean, I love my nap, but no, fortunately I don't need it nearly as much.
So before they stuck you on TV, did you have any training at all? Or was it just tossing? Same thing. They're just tossing you in the deep end without water wings and you're trying to swim.
Yeah. And it's difficult. I'm sure you're the same. I asked a lot of questions.
Feedback. We're goalies.
Yeah, exactly. No,
like we crave feedback.
I want like the worst feedback possible, right? Yes. Like give it to me. And that's it. We're at that, you know, I get that now. And that's, it's, you know, and because we're goalies, we're smart enough to actually take it and use it properly. Take notes, figure it out, think about it. Don't do it again. So, you know, being able to apply all of that, it has been fun. And we're just trying to keep getting better and keep doing it more precisely.
That's what made me realize right away when I started doing it. I was like, you know what? I spent a career making decisions in microseconds, right? Like that's what we do as goalies. We can process information very, very quickly. And it's almost frustrating when you don't get instant feedback. You know, as a goalie, you have instant gratification in a game. You make a great save, you win the game, you know, you feel good, you did your job. It's not the same way on television. It's not instant gratification, right? There's no metric for whether you're doing good or bad. Have you found that to be kind of difficult to wrap your head around?
Yeah, you'll get offset and be like, yeah, that was just okay. You know, and then great job out there. That was really cool. Really good insight. Like, oh, all right. I didn't feel that, you know, and then of course, as a goalie, I go the other way. All right. All the times that I thought I was doing really well, maybe I'm missing the mark on this.
Yep.
All right, so, but you also can't keep asking like, is that okay? You don't want to be the little puppy dog saying, you know, am I doing okay? Am I doing okay? Am I doing okay? So I'm getting to the point now I feel confident. And I think once I, you know, you kind of hit that, I don't know how many games it was for you, but for me, you know, maybe a dozen games where it's like, all right, I'm over this hill of worrying about it. Now I just go, and then I've accelerated. I feel like since then, just letting go and you know, just talking about what you see.
It's kind of the same way, as long as you're having fun. You know, it helps when you're really enjoying everybody around you too. Like just that feeling on set where you feel like, yeah, man, we're really vibing right now. You're laughing, you're loose and comfortable. I was so tight at first.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you get that exponential growth right away when you let go of all that stuff. For me, I was so, to your point, so tight. Like, all right, I'm in Boston now too. I don't want to rip anybody. Like I'm just back. I don't feel that confident.
You don't want to give your own opinion, honestly. Like, no. You have to learn how to give your opinion in a way that doesn't punish or bury somebody.
No, I know. And it's not easy.
Yeah, man, this is fun. I can't wait for us to compare notes when hopefully eventually the league gets back to normal and we can talk Bruins and Golden Knights and compare and go over everything. Well, thank you so much for spending an hour today. This was awesome to talk to. Well, somebody, I can't imagine how many games I backed up against you. I definitely never played, but I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time today.
No, Mike, it was a pleasure. Good meeting you over this and look forward to seeing you in the future.
Big thanks to Andrew Raycroft for coming on, telling his story, just giving us some insight into what it was like to have a long NHL career, transition out of the game, get his current job in broadcasting. Kind of sounds familiar. Listen, if you enjoy 6 Degrees, please subscribe and rate in iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to all your podcasts. If you're interested in advertising on 6 Degrees, please contact Believe at BLEAV. And as always, you can find me at Mike McKenna 56 on all the socials. Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.